Session number 12913.
Was Reel 15.
Charlie was dead. He was shot right between the eyes by a sniper, all through the stupidity of a young officer who they captured a what had been a searchlight position with a wall round it, built all round, like a bank. And he'd ordered Charlie straight up to put his Bren gun on the top, looking out over enemy occupied territory. Of course, he popped his head up off there, straight line, and all of a sudden, Charlie's there. No cover, no nothing. Bang, that was the end of him. I've never regretted anything more in my life. But I sent him back in. Then we started to move up with Battalion HQ. Moving along the road, with about six men, I suppose, and comes across where there had been a little engagement. A couple of our blokes are dead, and a couple of Jerry's. One of them was a sergeant, married man with a couple of kids. Knew him well. Sergeant Sillance. I think he was MM. From what you could see, they'd grenaded one another at the same time. There was one Jerry laying there. Well, what there was of him, all there was his legs up to the waist laying. And just prior to getting to them, I'd heard someone coming up the road, turned round, and a chap coming up with just a tin hat and a rifle. Looked at him, I said, "What are you then?" He was RASC. "So what are you doing here?" "Well," he said, "I'm proud off being back." He said, I'd come up and see some of the action." Well, I couldn't leave him there. I said, "Well, get on the back of them." And when we come up to where these men had been killed, and poor old Stephens, Silence at least, looked as if he had his trousers down, almost as if he'd had them blown off, or he'd been going to the toilet. And this chap went over to this German that had been, cut in halves, and there was a little pocket at the top of his trousers, only an inch from bare flesh, or mutilated flesh, and he reached in there with his fingers and pulled out a watch and put it in his pocket. He said, "I'm lucky, ain't I?" I looked at myself, "Well, you've got more guts than I have, mate." I said, "Come on." Got about 20 yards up the road, and there was a clearing in the trees, and laying into the clearing was a chateau. And I said, "Right." I said, "Extended order." I said, "We'll go in and see if it's occupied." So we started to advance in towards this chateau. And as we got out into the open, we heard in the distance, thud, thud, thud. And strangely enough, it's only men that have been in action will tell you the same thing. I mean, we knew it was a mortar, but you also knew where they were going to land. You knew they were coming there. And I said, "Back in the ditch." We dived back, and everybody dived in the ditch as the mortars all landed in that area where we'd been. It's a sixth sense that comes to you. It's marvellous, really. Well, that proved one thing. It wasn't occupied by the Germans, because they wouldn't have fired on their own men. The next thing I hears is a pair of ammunition boots going down the road like the hammers about. Looks down, and there was our hero, going back fast as he could go. He'd seen enough action. We went on to Battalion HQ. And all this happened in one little road within a matter of a couple of hours. Now, we're in Battalion HQ, and they brings in the sniper that I'd already told you about, a young lad. Now, the intelligence sergeant we had then was coloured, Anglo-Indian. He refused to speak to him because he wasn't white, and they let him get away with it. God, the arrogant swine he was. Then, down the road, came a group of French people, and they had a young girl with them, and she was English. She'd been hidden out on the farms ever since the occupation, and she was taken back to Bayeux. I don't know whatever happened to her, just passing through. Now, they also asked permission to take the farmer's, one of them was a farmer, his wife, into Bayeux for burial. Their farm had been occupied by the Germans just up the road, and as they pulled out, the farmer's wife came out, typical French, and started screaming insults at him and said, you know, you've been given a stick and all this, you know, as a woman would do. And they stop and fight because the British are just down the road. Obvious we were, because there was a battle going. One of them leaned out the back and shot her dead. So that was one of the nice things of war. So they had to have permission to take her body into Bayeux to be buried. That's one time when a woman should have kept her mouth shut. Then we had to put a patrol out. I was tight with signalers. So I had one signaler carry the set, and I had the handset. And I took the, went out with the patrol. I already had one shake-up, because as I got in this into a farm building, there was a noise coming out of a barn. And they opened the door quick and expected Germans in there, and they came a bloody great pig. That was a relief. And just up the road, we're going along, and I looked to the right, and we were in a line, and I got my handset in my hand, and I looked to the right, and in a tree, there was a parachutist, or a sniper, in harness, about 100 yards away. I see him as plain as anything. God, dear. Gave him the doings, grabbed somebody's rifle, and I opened up on him. So did everybody else. And we left him hanging there. Don't know if we killed him or who killed him. But he was well and truly dead by the time we'd finished. We pulled out, done our patrol. Jerry pulled back. And then we made our way to our next position. And that was on the outskirts of a place called Hotto. There we dug in. And we were there for quite a long time, really. But just before that, I'd seen a very funny, what they call it, phenomenon or something like that. I was in a ditch, heard a funny noise, and looked up, and there was about at least 100 yards long flies. They came straight across, and it couldn't have been no more than about a yard deep, as they were in this thin line. A terrific noise, and they just flew right through. Never heard of it, never seen anything like it before in my life. Because all the fields, of course, were filled up with dead animals. Cows, legs in the air, horses. What hadn't been killed by artillery apparently had been killed by the Germans. And when we pulled into our battalion HQ, one of the first jobs was to get the bulldozer up and bury the dead animals. We had to have a bulldozer in any case to dig a hole to put in our half track, which had our battalion brigade set in. That's one of the first times I'd seen a signal officer. Apparently he'd been travelling in that half track all the time. And directly there was a hole dug, half track was in there, he was under it with a blanket around him. All the companies had got dug in and couldn't advance no further. There was a sunken road and we couldn't get over it. Jerry was well. He'd made a stand there. There were several things took place there. Different attacks. And there was one shell fired, only one. And that hit the end of a farmhouse, and that was like an oil shell. First time they'd used one of them. The only time, I think. And the CO, he was a bit of a nutter. He had one success there. He set a patrol out one night. He said, I'm going to send a patrol out, big fighting patrol, with no barrage or nothing, he said. Straight out, straight in. Well, they did that, came back with prisoners, and all they got was one man slightly wounded, I think, which was a lovely success for him. But he was as mad as a hatter. I mean, you were under fire all day, with different things, mortars and what have you, and you had to snatch what rest you could. Well, you could. Well, one morning, we all get pulled out of our dugouts, and the CO's raving. And every one of us, he got officers, no matter who we were, sergeants, all running round the field, one behind the other, like bloody schoolboys, because he reckoned we should have been on stand too. He punished us. God, he was mad. He came into where my battalion set was one day. He said, Sergeant, a peat bomb. I said, yes, sir. He said, if you drop one of those, he said, from a tree onto a tank, would it still blow a tank up? I said, of course it would. I explained to him how all the force of explosion went through the front, or through the nozzle on the front. Oh, he said. He said, if I got two, he said, and put either side of a road and pegged out peats, he said, with a wire across, so it pulled the trigger. He said, would that blow? I said, oh, yes. I said, have you done it properly? Oh, he said, have you got a runner? I said, yeah. Of course I have, sir. He said, go and get the Pioneer sergeant. Goes and gets the Pioneer sergeant. He said, now, he said, I want you to take some men out, and this is what I want you to do. They had to go behind enemy lines, hang these bloody pits off of trees, and try and fix up these pit bombs off the trees, and try and fix the pits to fire at them. The times we attacked there, we attacked and attacked and attacked, and we couldn't get out. It was there one day, we'd been there quite a while, and our group was called, and the officers came in, and when they were going back, two of them went through a hole in the hedge. They'd been through it before, but it was a booby trap there, exploded. I think it blinded one and badly wounded the other one. But he got over it. He's a brigadier, or retired as a brigadier, Brigadier Warren. And when I reminded him of it only a few months ago, he was surprised. He said, would you? I said, of course I remember. I said, he was really surprised. Then we did have funny incidents even there. We had a sergeant major, and he was a Channel Islander, and he came out with rations, and because he was stationed at Rear Battalion HQ, and he used to bring up the rations and ammunition. His name was Mansfield, Sapper. They used to call him Sapper Mansfield. So he comes up one day with the 15 underweight and the mail, and somehow he'd acquired one of these wirelesses that they had issued comforts for the troops in the earlier part of the war. How he got on with it, I don't know. And he had it wired up to the battery of the 15 underweight. He went straight through our lines and carried on. And he was going straight towards Jerry with this bloody wireless set blaring away, and him just going straight across the field. They put a burst of brain gun across his bows, which pulled him up short and got him back. Otherwise, he'd have driven all the way in. Well, that caused a bit of a laugh, too. Then I was out one day. Used to have a laugh out of a kiddie I had as a cook. He used to cook our breakfast, Signer. And one morning we were breakfast there, and they're mortaring. And he dived back in his slit trench. I was trying to think of his name, Westbrook. I said, Westbrook? I said, if you let those bloody sausages burn, I said, I'll have your guts for garters. And there he was, in between bombs dropping, getting out, turning the sausages over and diving back in the hole. We thought it was a terrific joke. So did he afterwards. And I came in one day, and a bomb had pitched right in his kitchen. And what he cooked in was all petrol tins that had been cut off and things like that. And there was all these tins tipped up at various angles with holes through them, shrapnel. He said, I've saved your dinner, Jim. And there was a couple of bits of sausage and a bit of bacon. Then the other tin had a drop of tea in one corner. He'd say, boy. And that nipper, one morning, he was crying his eyes out. I said, what's the matter with you? I said, what the bloody hell's wrong with you, man? He said, when I was shaving, he said, I dropped my mirror. He said, and I broke my mirror. He said, that's 7 years bad luck. I said, you lucky bugger. He said, why, Sergeant? I said, well, you just told me. I said, you're going to have 7 years bad luck. I said, this war, I said, it's only going to last. I said, a few more months or a year. I said, but you've got to live 7 years. I said, to serve 8 years, 7 years, bad luck. His face lit up like a moon. Oh, yeah, he said, so I have, haven't I? He believed it. I had to go back to Battalion H, Rear Battalion HQ about some signal stores I want to check up on. Sapper Mansfield's back there, and he used to search all the dead. He would search them and put all their gear into little bags he used to put them in and document everything. And I mean everything. If it was one of our blokes and he was dead and he had a ring on his finger, he'd chop his finger off, get that ring off so that that ring would be sent home. Couldn't hurt him no more than he was. One day there was some Devons had been killed. Like four or five of them, Jerry killed them. Well, he killed them quite a few days earlier. And there was a pile of grit by the road and just covered them in the grit. Our blokes found them and brought them back. And they stunk of high heaven, as you can understand. And yet old Sapper went right through them and took every bit off of them. And the intelligence officer had to have all this stuff. And he was sitting on a ration box, eating his dinner at the mess tin. And old Sapper went up and dropped these bags by the side of his plate. He said, here's the effects, he said, of those Devons. You could smell it from yards away. He never finished his dinner. He thought it was hilarious. But I went back to Rear Battalion HQ one day. And Sapper, when we'd come home, he'd married a wren. And she was a chief wren, chief petty officer. He married her, and she sent out, and she just had a baby. And it was a son. And there was Sapper. He had a wheelbarrow, pair of white gloves, top hat, and written on the wheelbarrow in chalk was Sapper and Son, Undertakers, wheeling it all round, and everybody was, and he'd had a few drinks, everybody was cheering him because he'd just become a father. That was a sort of humour that went down in those days. It was a little while afterwards that I got blown off my bike, sent back to England. It's nothing much, just should never have been sent back, really, it's superficial.
How did it happen?
Got a mortar bomb. Anyway, went into a hospital, the other side of Birmingham, and of course there were some lads there that was really bad. Lads laying in hospital there, one young lad, both legs in plaster, right up to the thigh, and about twice a day the nurse used to come in with a dustpan and brush and sweep all the maggots into the pan. When I first saw it, I said, ugh. Then she says, the best thing that could happen, she said. It eats all the pus and everything else, she said, and cleans the wounds. A lot of people you tell, they don't believe that. Then there was another young kid there. He was in the coal streams. Brought him in. He was in plaster from the waist up to the neck and one arm. And he wanted the nurse, her sister, said to him, you need a shave. I said, I'll shave him. She said, no, you won't. She said, he'll shave himself, she said. He only had the one hand. He's only a young lad, about 19, I suppose, at the most. Proper mummy's boy. So when I got her on her arm, I said, that was a bit hard, wasn't it? She said, look, she said, I've got as much sympathy for that lad as you have. She said, I've got to try and give him the will to live. She said, he's lost it. And I've got to try to bring him out, she said, if I can. His mother came up to see him and they had eggs. And they were hard boiled. His mother said, he only likes lightly boiled eggs, you know, like a mother would. Sister said, he'll have the same as anyone else, she said. Hard boiled eggs, it is, that's what he gets. Anyway, when she got the mother on her own and she explained to her exactly why it was. But 2 days afterwards, the poor little bugger died. He was in a hell of a state. And then there was a kiddie that was taking a mickey out of me. He was saying, Sergeant, go and get me a bedpan, because I was helping, because I was an outpatient, hobbling around. And I'd bring him a bedpan, and he used to gloat about. It was only in fun doing getting this bedpan. Get me a bottle, Sergeant. course, everybody enjoyed the joke with him. But this hospital was a civilian hospital, and it was a children's hospital before it had been taken over for D-Day, like, for the casualties. And I goes out there where the bedpans are, and there is a kiddie's one, a baby's one. All right, you bugger. So next time he says, "Sergeant, get me a bedpan, please." So out I go.